Time now for Midweek Media Watch with Colin Peacock, who joins me from the Wellington studio. Colin, kia ora to you.
Hi there, Emil.
We were going to start by talking American politics, but of course we had a big story today, the release of the report on the inquiry into abuse in state care. And the media is quite a, well, is quite a big part of the story. Is that the right way to phrase it? I don't know. Let's start by talking about that anyway.
Well, kind of not, but in a way, because, you know, it's all about the people and all of that. But this
exactly.
is a six-year process that the media has covered when the hearings have been on. You know, it's a hard pitch in some ways for the media. It's the sort of thing people don't want to hear in their news programs in the morning, maybe. But, you know, clearly, I mean, involving so many people, and now we have that headline figure from the report, more than 200,000 people, and some that we will never know. That number just carries a weight all on its own. But Ken Clearwater, one of the main campaigners for this, one of the prime movers of it, he spoke to Susanna Leotawa on Checkpoint today, and at the end of the interview he thanked her, I think on behalf of like all media, for bringing it all into the public arena and playing a role, which, you know, she really appreciated. But I know that others have said, well, maybe if the, and of course the media has done, when you think of like Dilworth School and the abuse going on there, and you know, other cases in a Puni Boys home in the past, that, for example, just to name two where the media has really played a role. But you know, I guess other survivors and their loved ones would be thinking, well, how come this stuff was going on for so long that, you know, this isn't a surprise to many, that now that it's come out in the way that it has, the numbers might be, but, you know, we knew, and maybe in some senses the media didn't do enough. Hard one to judge.
Yeah.
I actually spoke to Ken Clearwater, interestingly, this afternoon, because the BBC wanted his number, and something, a penny dropped, because he talked in that interview with Susanna about he kind of let his guard down. And he used to be a rough, tough boxer. And suddenly the penny dropped me that one of the first things I ever did as a, when I was at journalism school, the first broadcast thing I ever did, I think, was to go out and make a report about, he was running prize fighting things in pubs in Christchurch. They're a bit controversial, the idea of having boxing and fights in pubs and challenges for money. And yeah, I'm pretty sure I did a report on that, and I found it all a bit unpleasant at the time. I was really out of my depth and hadn't been in that environment before, and he was running it, and I thought he was quite an odd character, and yet all these, that has only just occurred to me today, that was the guy, and he confirmed it for me on the phone. So yeah,
look at that. New Zealand, small world. Small world. All right, well, let's turn now to the big US political news that came out Monday morning, and it got the media going here, Colin.
Yeah, sure did. I mean, the timing of it, as much as anything, just before 6 a.m. I think on Monday, so all the, you know, the morning news shows all keyed up, ready to roll, and that happened. And people were surprised by the timing. They didn't expect it to happen on a Sunday in the States. But to my mind, it's just kind of a shame that the focus now is still on, I mean, the election's not till November maybe, but the focus still on all the candidates, the strategy of the parties and the personalities. And look, this is going to seem a bit like nitpicking with all that in mind, but I still think there is something that's a bit wrong in the way this is reported. It's a word, but also a concept. See if you can pick it. Here's TVNZ Breakfast at 8:30 on Monday.
Okay, Maya Noor, here is your 8:30 news. The race for the White House is in for a shake-up, with Joe Biden ending his bid for re-election this morning. Our US correspondent Logan Church joins us now. Morena Logan, what more do we know?
Well, in the last 5 seconds, it's been confirmed that Kamala Harris is now officially in the race.
Races.
It's not a race. It's the opposite of a race. We know when it's going to end, on November, when the vote comes, then the, you know, the swearing in, or whatever you call it, inauguration in January. It's just not a race. It's a straight, it's a thing, but maybe it's only me.
They can't say it's a thing. Say it's a thing, Colin.
Well,
it's a symbol.
They don't have to say it's a race. RNZ said the same at 8 a.m. ZB was saying it's, I mean, everybody does. Maybe it's just me, who cares? Got it off my chest now. Not a race. Just not a race. And I mean, also, like, the haste, you know, I'm sorry to pick on him, but Logan Church being so desperate to say, like, in the last 5 seconds, Kamala Harris is confirmed. And actually, TVNZ had the former CNN reporter Brian Stelter on their program, I think about a half hour before, and he confirmed that. He said that on the show, and it was first I knew, but that Kamala Harris had confirmed that she was going to be a candidate. So actually, the Hayes, poor old Logan Church, I am picking on him now, but this, have a listen to this, this was his first live cross on Breakfast after the news about the Biden standing down had become public.
Logan, you seem to be scrambling as well. What are you doing in an Uber?
Yes, well, I was at the airport, Daniel, when this news breaks. American politics, as I've learned, quickly outstrips your travel plans quite quickly. But look, let's just go back over the last few weeks.
So, yeah, he had the selfie stick out and himself on a shaky mobile phone thing, literally in an Uber from a flight that I guess he had to not catch, and so he could be live on the Breakfast program. But I don't, you know, I think Breakfast viewers would have been sitting there thinking, no, just take your flight. Don't worry, we'll come back to you. There's plenty of time to digest this.
It's exciting, though, isn't it?
Oh, of course. Yeah, yeah, it is. And I mean, actually, that previous bit of audio we heard, you could hear aircraft in the background, yeah. And it does add to the atmosphere. So, yeah, maybe, but I don't know. To me, I just don't know how desperate local viewers are to have this stuff up to the button on the minute. You know, I think we could have waited till later to hear from Logan or anyone else, to be honest.
Any other gripes you have, Colin, about this? How this immensely consequential story was covered here in New Zealand?
Yeah. Seeing as you ask, yeah, I've got a couple. So this is a bit wrong, a bit mean. So some examples. So just New Zealand journalists and presenters and what they thought about the candidates. You know, I guess the story's broken. You have to say something, maybe. And I shouldn't be so picky, but here's a case in point. This is ZB's Wellington Morning Show with the local host Nick Mills talking to one of ZB's local reporters about it.
KB, I'm going to ask you as a journalist and an educated woman, Kamala Harris. What do you think? Do you feel that she's got it?
I like her. I saw a line this morning saying it's going to be as much about whether people like her as whether people are prepared to have a black woman in the president role. I think
they're ready for that, though, aren't they?
Don't know. I've got no idea. I don't live there. I've never even been to America. I don't know.
Sorry, it does feel mean to hear it back quite like that. But, you know, he doesn't know what her name is. She hasn't been to America. She doesn't know. She doesn't want to answer the question. It's all a bit awkward. And in a very similar vein, Duncan Garner, in his editor-in-chief live vodcast that he does these days, he put the same sort of question to his news editor, Grace Cocker.
Well, I just don't know if Americans will vote for a woman, let alone a woman of colour. Yeah. And it's a really negative thing to say, but there's a lot of people that I don't think would be supportive of that.
This gets Trump home. Yeah. No wonder he's so cocky. The humility after the bullet is gone, isn't it? And he's, the cockiness is back.
Okay, now last one of my mean selection here. So Barry Soper on News Talk ZB and doing his regular political bit at, I think, 4:45 on News Talk ZB. He gave his recons on what he called Camilla, kept calling her Camilla, said she'd struggle to get the Democrats within cooey of Donald Trump in the polls, which I'm not sure is quite right based on the current polls and, you know, the elections in November. Anyway, then he moves it on to what I thought were more relevant grounds, like, okay, if it's to be Trump, as he seemed to believe, what might a Trump win mean for New Zealand?
But a Trump presidency won't be that good for New Zealand because Trump is not a free trader. You'll remember the PPTA, or now it's the Comprehensive Progressive, because of Justin Trudeau, that meeting that they had in Vietnam just after Jacinda Ardern became Prime Minister.
Yes, I think a better point there that this would not, a Trump presidency wouldn't be great for our trade. But the agreement was the TPPA, Trans-Pacific Partnership.
PPTA, it's a teaching union, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so nothing to do with the old PPTA, but that's just a slip of the tongue. Obviously, no biggie. But, you know, talking about it in New Zealand terms, I thought was better. Then had a look at Stuff. They had their three senior political correspondents, Tove O'Brien, Jenna Lynch, and political editor Luke Malpass, standing side by side for an awkward video with Tove O'Brien bouncing the mic between them, all saying their bit about, what were her chances? Is it a shoo-in for, you know, just all this stuff, wargaming, what this means. And it was all a bit too sudden. And like I said before, I just don't know if viewers really want it. And Tove O'Brien said something interesting. She said, look, just like here, voters won't like it when there's an anointed one. meaning if Kamala Harris does just get the nod, there isn't a contested process, people won't like it. And she was comparing that to New Zealand, that they don't like it when a candidate is picked out and there isn't the least semblance of contest. So maybe, but I was thinking, you know, that didn't work for Hillary Clinton, having been, you know, a former First Lady, but, you know, the Kennedys, the Bush clan, the Roosevelt, you know, America doesn't seem to mind a dynasty, but I guess maybe all those people did, you know, have to stand and win a contest to be their party's candidate, and then the ones that went on to be president would have benefited from that.
I mean, I guess it's one of those topics though, Colin, isn't it, that everyone... Maybe it's easier for everybody to have an opinion on this because we don't have as, you know, it is happening in America and we don't have skin in the game, and it is exciting. And it's kind of like, you know when a heavyweight boxing match comes around and all of a sudden people who've never watched a boxing match in their entire lives are suddenly experts on boxing. You know, that kind of happens with American politics.
Yeah, I guess that's it. I am being a bit cranky about it. I mean, if they're only doing what we're all doing and talking about it, fair enough there. I suppose that blows a hole in my argument that people wouldn't be interested in the reckons and the chit-chat. If they're going to listen to their colleagues at the water cooler saying it, no reason they wouldn't listen to New Zealand journalists with their reckons. But I suppose, and you say it is exciting, it's also, it is genuinely historic, because if I think it's back in Lyndon Johnson, 1968 was the last president to say, you know, I quit and hand it over to another. And look, I speak from experience, because I think I was about 2 weeks old when he did that. So
really? Oh, Colin. Wow. Yeah.
So I've lived this history, Sonny. And actually, I should also be fair to TVNZ, from having said that too much of the instant panicky stuff. They actually did go to a range on the Monday of political commentators and people connected with the parties, a guy called Peter Loge, Martin Dashley, a strategist, and the Democrat pollster Nancy Zdunkovic. And as I mentioned before, the former CNN guy Brian Stelter, who did say, I can confirm that, you know, Kamala Harris is going to stand as a candidate, which was at that point genuinely new news. And Three News, I give them a bit of credit too. The new news, TV3 bulletin produced by Stuff, they highlighted also the Project 2025, you know, conservative manifesto that a lot of people think would become influential in a Trump presidency if there's to be one. And that was interesting. They didn't actually say a whole lot about it in their bulletin, but they did pick it out. And, you know, that's where I think it needs to go now, is to about the policies. What's actually on the line with this election, rather than it just being, you know, Biden or Harris or Trump, or whatever, and the personalities and the differences and the party strategy and all that, to talk about what it actually might mean much better.
You mentioned Brian Stelter, who's an interesting guy. I think he was CNN's media correspondent for a long time. Did he, in his commentary on this, have anything to say about the media?
Only specifically that he thought American, there should be more TV debates. He said, we'll really find this stuff out between the candidates. And he said, American voters deserve them. I think that's an open question now, because Trump had been willing to debate Biden, and that worked out pretty well for him in the first one, but maybe not so much with Harris. So we'll see. But he said this is really important now that we've got a new candidate, and that he hopes that will happen.
Would things be different for the media, though, under another Trump presidency? You know, he has little respect for the mainstream media, and indeed the mainstream media, really in America in particular, really had to grapple with how to cover him, and indeed has been accused of really, I suppose, chasing people into Donald Trump's camp by being, some people would say, inflammatory or not fair to him.
Yeah, and well, also he's a TV guy and he knows the language. You could see it in that debate where Biden looked awful off camera, or when he wasn't speaking, but he was on camera, looked terrible. Trump was you know, making the moves and all of that. But look, I've been reading that Project 2025 that I referenced before. So if this is something that him and his strategists are likely to follow, this conservative manifesto, there's a whole section on it in media and broadcasting. It's pretty interesting reading. In fact, it's written almost, it's quite jazzed up, readable terms. But basically, one thing they're saying he would do is, or they're urging him to do, is to take out all that stuff they do overseas, like the Voice of America and Radio Free Asia, Radio Free Europe, and all of that, and basically to make it, they're saying, we're getting killed on America's talking points overseas by foreign propaganda. We need to I'm paraphrasing now, but out propaganda. So they're basically talking about defunding all these existing organisations and putting a budget into creating a more American projecting.
America rules.
Yeah, right. That's right. And, you know, can you imagine that? Staffed with, you know, guys from Newsmax and all that, right. Trump-friendly media, like, sounds horrible.
So that's media abroad. What about media at home?
Yeah, he's saying, well, they say in the report, the guy who wrote this particular chapter, all presidents the side of Nixon have wanted to kill American public media, which I thought was mostly funded by, you know, donations and charity, philanthropy, yeah. NPR and stuff like that, local stations. But there are tax breaks and free licenses for them and stuff like that. They're saying, do away with it. They're biased. Get rid of it. They should only run ads for sponsors. They should be non-educational. The next president should instruct the Federal Communications Commission, FCC, to exclude all the stations affiliated with PBS and NPR and all the privileges that come with it. So that they basically want to shut that down.
Now, you mentioned earlier on Stuff's political editor, Luke Malpass, and Luke had a story in the weekend that got your attention, Cole.
Yeah, personal thing, I guess, for me. It was about a high school that one of my kids goes to, so Onslow College. This is really great. It's the, you know, the Post is obviously Wellington's paper, formerly the Dominion Post. So it's the city and region's daily paper. This is in the weekend edition, though. Big story about an issue that's now nationwide, the paused school buildings, or a lot of them are paused, and a lot of school builds need to happen. The budgets are blown out. But yeah, Onslow College, where one of my kids goes, is really got big problems. And he brought it to life in a brilliant way. And I think you could read the story and even out of town, I think it would ring alarm bells or have echoes of stories that people are hearing about in schools that need work done. So yeah, brilliant. And Bernard Hickey also picked it out, a financial and business journalist. He picked it out for his daily newsletter and put it in the context of all these things now that he writes about a lot, about our chickens are coming home to roost, underinvestment and all that. And this was, you know, a really brilliant vignette of it, and one that, you know, rang true for me, you know, knowing the situation on the ground there.
Now, Colin, last week on Midweek Media Watch, Hayden had to deliver an apology, and you, being the busy man that you are, and jumping around various shows, you hosted Saturday Morning.
I did.
Last weekend, mm-hmm. And you have we're calling this a clarification, are we, concerning your own school days after something you said on Saturday Morning.
Yeah, you'll laugh at this. Yeah, this is an awkward one. So yeah, I thought it was going pretty well on Saturday Morning, doing an interview with a constitutional lawyer who was saying, actually, we need to figure things out for ourselves, don't follow readers, don't follow rules and so on. And she started talking about education and that kids shouldn't do rote learning. And I happen to mention that I remember being told in my standard four, so, you know, that's, when you're 10 years old. Anyway, you know what I mean.
Yep.
And,
yeah,
that's the one. And, I mentioned that, you know, we'd all been told that if we couldn't do joined up handwriting with a fountain pen, we couldn't be employed in certain jobs. Uh-huh. And I remember this quite fairly vividly. So it must kind of be true, I'm hoping, but I do have shaky, hazy memories, particularly that far back. And I named my teacher Mr. Patchett. Uh-huh. I'm pretty sure was my teacher in Standard 4. So I don't know why I said that, named him on air. But anyhow, then, you know, immediately following the text that come in on 2101 through the morning, as you have to do, someone pretty soon after texted in, oh, did you go to Karori School in Wellington? Yeah, that'd be, I remember Mr. Patrick, because he was pretty well known, ran the Teachers College for a while as well. And yeah, so at that point I'm thinking, oh no, I didn't even remember saying the name out loud. Uh-huh. And maybe I shouldn't have done that. And when I got home next day, my partner said to me, you know, Cam's teacher is the son of, you know, Mr. Patchett. And it turned out there's the son of...
No.
Yeah. So I thought, oh. At this point, I'm thinking, what exactly did I say? So the problem here is that whether this is actually true or not, the thing with the handwriting, I'm really now not sure. But what I do know is that I can barely remember the names of any of my teachers, but he was the one that got me thinking and working and... because before that, we'd all been just learning how to write and shape letters, and I'd been goofing around with Cuisenaire rods, making catapults out of them, and not really doing maths. But in his class, we studied the solar system, and because of that, I was dragging my dad down to the Golden Bay Planetarium in Wellington every spare weekend. We did the Antarctic, you know, reading about Scott and Amundsen and the Shackleton's boat journey, doing big projects about that. There was an election that year too, and I have a school book somewhere where I was writing about the Values Party getting no seat, the forerunner of the Greens. They got no seats because of the first-past-the-post system, even though they, you know, they had a bit of support. I think Social Credit got a couple of, you know, so I think I really bloomed in his class. It was all down to Mr. Patchett, and somehow all these years later, the only tribute he gets from me is a possibly apocryphal story about about the consequences of not doing joined-up handwriting. So, yeah, a full clarification there that I didn't know what I was fully talking about. Mr. Patchett was a great teacher, and yeah, I think Standard 4 was the making of me. Wouldn't be here, probably, but for Mr. Patchett.
And Mr. Patchett.
Yeah, the fact that Mr. Patchett's son is teaching mine is just a weird foible. But
that's beautiful.
And it's a warning to me to just be a bit careful when you start freestyling on those big, long live shows where you can say anything.
No one's going to cut you off.
Yeah, that's right.
Couple of minutes at the end. About RNZ News, which also has needed to do a bit of a clarification, Colin.
Yeah, that's right. So there's a story people might remember a while back. There was pressure on Julianne Genta of the Greens and some of her behaviour with constituents. So this was all based around a florist in the Wellington suburb of Newtown, which is, you know, on the main thoroughfare close to the CBD. And RNZ had run a story because they had an altercation in the store that you might remember was in the headlines. And the florist had claimed that cycleways, lack of car parking was damaging her business's viability, and they had a disagreement. But the article was actually about a claim that car parks had been removed from outside her shop to make way for a cycleway. And it hadn't. And one of the complainant who heard about this on RNZ knew that it hadn't and provided evidence that there were no cycleway photo. So in one sense, the story was really about Julianne Genta's conduct and the grievance of this particular shop owner. But yeah, this fact here, so basically RNZ was shown, look, there's evidence here that says this detail of the story, which is germane, is wrong and should be corrected, and they weren't quick enough to correct it. So they're just pointing that one out. But as I think I pointed out on Midweek Media Watch at the time the story was live, Nobody mentioned there's a huge Countdown supermarket with three levels of free car parking literally across the road, which I thought was a bit more relevant when it came down to the possibilities of cycleways in the vicinity, no matter about shop car parks and being removed right outside and the rectitude of that or not. You know, there's car parks for Africa right across the road.
And so what's the moral of the story there, Cole?
Oh, just when you're provided with evidence, you should do the clarification as quickly as possible, even if it's not the main detail of the story. Just put it up there and then everybody's covered.
Colin Peacock, nice having you on as always. Appreciate it.
Thanks. See you in a couple of weeks.